Pour yourself a cold one.
They strike them, huh?
And listen to Russ Tucker and Philadelphia Eagles film junkie Fran Duffy break down the top college prospects on another tasty edition of The College Draft.
Oh, it's daddy soda time. And baby, oh baby, did I have some daddy sodas over the weekend. Anyway, I digress. You don't want to hear about that. You want to hear about the best defensive tackles and edge rushers in college football heading into the 2019 NFL draft. It is the College Draft Podcast. He is Fran Duffy, the star of the show at FDuffy3 on Twitter, the Philadelphia Eagles video scouting guru. I am Ross Tucker at Ross Tucker NFL on Twitter and Instagram, a former offensive lineman that loves breaking down the prospects and getting ready for the draft, which is about a month away at this point. We're always presented by betonline.ag because they're awesome and because they have a promo code podcast1 that gives you guys a 50% welcome bonus when you sign up, and obviously placing some bets on March Madness, Sweet 16, always a pretty good time if you want to get signed up over at betonline.ag. Fran, I've been looking forward to this particular position group really all offseason because I think it's fair to say, right, as we look at both the edge guys and the D tackles, that this is the strongest, best position in this draft and maybe one of the strongest, best, you know, crops at a single position group, or specifically this position group, that I can remember in a long time. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think it's fair. And I think really when you look at both groups, you know, kind of in silos, I think you look at this defensive tackle group, it's so strong at the top. I mean, you're talking like 4, 5, 6 guys that have first round credentials. And then you look at this edge group and you could say the same thing, which we can say that over the course of, you know, you can go back a few years and look at groups that are different draft classes that had edge groups that had multiple guys in the first round, but it's a really deep group off the edge as well. So I think when you look at this class as a whole on the defensive line, guys that can get after the quarterback up front, you've got to be really, really excited. And yeah, it certainly is the strength of this class.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And I'm already looking forward to our first question. It's daddy soda time. And which one of these guys is your favorite to watch on film?
Well, I think I would be remiss if we didn't mention both Nick Bosa and Quinnen Williams, right? Because, you know, depending on who you talk to, either guy is seen as the number one player overall in this class. I think when you look at Nick Bosa off the edge, certainly the name helps, right? I mean, we've seen his brother Joey tear up the NFL whenever he's been on the field over the past 3 seasons. He's a well-rounded player, just like Joey was. Can defend the run, which he showed a little bit this year. That was a question for me, not because he was bad at it, but because we didn't really see him do it. Remember, Ohio State had such a deep defensive line over the course of the last couple of years. So his first 2 years on campus, he played in such a hard rotation, such a steady rotation. There weren't a lot of examples of him really having to set a strong edge and play in those early downs. You know, those upperclassmen really stole those early down reps. So he was coming off onto the field, you know, in those passing situations and getting after the quarterback. So I was interested to see this year, all right, let's see how he does as a 3-down player. Obviously, we had a small sample size doing that, and that's probably one of the biggest knocks you have on him, is that it is such a small sample size of him being a true 3-down player when you talk about Nick Bosa. But outside of that, I mean, he's athletic, he's stout, he's really good with his hands, just like his brother was. He's outstanding with his plan of attack against offensive linemen. He can win in so many different ways. He can line up inside or outside. He can stand up if you need him to. Nick Bosa is just a really, really talented player. And then when you go to Quinnen Williams, you know, this guy, again, small sample size, kind of a one-year wonder as a redshirt sophomore, only 1 year of real action at nose tackle, took over for Daron Payne, who was a first-round pick last year. And Quinnen Williams is just so explosive off the snap. I mean, his ability to get into the backfield, win quickly, and affect the quarterback, is really second to none in this class. I'm really, really impressed with what I've seen from him on film, and he's gotten better over the course of his career. Seems like a great kid and just, a very, very positive influence, a guy who's still extremely young, and the arrow is pointing up seemingly on his prospects as a football player. So I think when you look at both of these guys, I think you'd be remiss to just pick one as who's the favorite, especially since we're doing two position groups today, but a lot to be excited about with both of these guys. Let me ask you one question, Ross. What were your thoughts? There was a lot of buzz late last week on the 49ers taking Quinnen Williams out to his favorite international House of Pancakes. What were your thoughts after reading that?
Wait a minute. Say that. Tell me that again.
Oh, you didn't see this? So the 49ers, they took him out for his took him out for a bite to eat, just to have a meeting with him surrounding his pro day, and they took him to IHOP. That was where he wanted to go.
I did not know that.
That's oh, dude, amazing. It's so great.
That is so this amazing. Is great.
This is, I get your raw reaction to this.
Yeah, that's amazing that that's where he wanted to go. It's funny because I would have, I thought what you're going to mention is that when he was asked who his favorite player was, and he said Jason Kelce,
that's awesome,
the center too. For the Eagles. That's amazing.
So let me tell you this. I was at the combine, and the way that it works at the combine with media availability with players is that the players come out and they talk the day before they work out. So the offensive linemen are obviously the first group that work out, so they're the first group we talk to. And I talked with Ross Pierschbacher, the center from Alabama, and I said, hey, who's the toughest guy you went against? And, usually I try and couch it with, all right, who's the toughest opponent you went against so these guys aren't just fluffing up their teammates. But he tells me, he's like, Quinnen Williams, really quickly. And I'm like, all right, well, what was so tough about Quinnen Williams? And he said, look, I practice against him every single day, every single week during the season, and he was kicking my butt early in the year. And I was trying to study him so intently, so closely each week after practice, trying to figure out what his tells were, what were the things that he was doing with his hands and his stance that can kind of tip me off as to what he was going to do, how he was going to try and attack me. Every single week I did it, and every single week he changed things up so that I could never really get a beat on him. And so I was like, well, that's an awesome anecdote. So I went a couple days later, Quinnen Williams speaks, and I go over thinking I'm going to ask him about this. I don't even need to. He's already kind of talking about, look, when I moved, because when he first got there, he was a defensive end. He was a little bit smaller. He said, when I first moved to nose tackle as a redshirt freshman, they were crushing me. Lester Cotton and Ross Pierschbacher, they were putting me on my back. I was not used to dealing with double teams. So he said, my whole redshirt freshman year when I was a backup to Daron Payne, I sat there and I studied Ross Pierschbacher every day after practice and figured out exactly what he was doing, exactly how he was trying to attack me, all the different things he was doing from a pre-snap standpoint with his stance to tell me what he was about to do. And then I figured out, okay, this is how I need to attack him. So I just thought it was really, really interesting getting into, what his work habits are, his film study, and obviously his preparation, considering what he was able to do to his teammate. Ross Pierschbacher is not going to be a first or second round pick, but he's going to be a draft pick, and he's going to play in the NFL. So I thought that was a cool story from that part.
Very cool story. I don't think I've ever heard a guy say that his favorite player is like a potential adversary or a guy that plays like the opposite position on the other side of the ball. Like anytime you ask a receiver, they say a receiver is their favorite player. You ask a safety, they'll say Sean Taylor or whoever, right? Brian Dawkins. I don't think I've ever heard a college kid say, oh, Jason Kelce, a 10-year NFL center. Like that's just that says a lot about him. It's pretty interesting.
Does.
That he would say that's his favorite player. Here's my question, Fran. And what I think, in part the 49ers need to ask themselves this. The Jets may need to ask themselves this. And I think part of it also is dependent upon what you already have on your roster. But let's say, Fran, you're just starting out a new team. Okay? I think this is a really interesting discussion as to whether or not you'd rather have a dominant edge guy like Nick Bosa or Josh Allen or a dominant inside guy like Quinnen Williams. And I feel like with every passing year, I lean more towards the inside guy than the outside guy just because I think the inside guy can be more consistently disruptive even when he's not getting sacks. And frankly, even if he's not getting hits on the quarterback, I just think that that inside pressure affects the quarterback more than edge pressure when the guy doesn't get something that shows up on the stat sheet, if that makes sense.
Well, it's funny. I asked Mike Mayock this exact question at the combine this year and during his press conference. And, Mike said, he said to me, he's like, look, I've talked with every quarterback in the NFL, every starting quarterback in the NFL of the last few years. And I've asked them that question. Well, what's the most difficult thing to deal with as a quarterback? And they always say that it's instant pressure right in their face. When you've got pressure off the edge, you can step into a soft pocket. You can step up away from that edge pressure. But when you get that pressure right in your face, now you've got to move. You're breaking the timing of a play. You've got to get outside of structure, outside the pocket, and try and make a play happen. Some guys have the ability to do that physically. Some guys, maybe not so much. And then also the mental standpoint of it as well. So you're throwing everything off when you've got that instant pressure. And I can tell you, just from watching film, from studying film around the NFL over the last few years, and watching a guy like, we've got Fletcher Cox here in Philadelphia, watching Fletcher Cox each week, it's tough to be able to handle a guy like that. I mean, you can slide protection, slide your center towards his, towards his way more often than not, sure. But it's a lot easier. There are a lot of different things you can do rather than completely, change your protection each time and always slide towards Fletcher Cox. There are a lot of different things you can do with an edge guy. You can help with chips. You can keep a tight end in. You can chip the running back out of the backfield. There are different things you can do with an edge guy. With a defensive tackle, a dominant defensive tackle, you really, the only thing that you can do is slide, and then that then opens yourself up to weaknesses on the backside of the slide protection, and defensive coordinators find ways to attack it. So to me, I think that I agree with you. I think it is more on the defensive tackle. So you look more at a guy like Quinnen Williams and a guy that has that ability to instantly penetrate. His guy's got a lot of value.
Really does. I think it's the inside guy for the reasons that you mentioned. And I do think it is harder to double. I mean, you can always slide there, but then that slide is not just for the D tackle. That slide is to also pick up and be responsible for linebackers. So it's not as easy as just saying, just slide to wherever that guy is. You can, but there's a lot of other things that are tied into that. Who you're blocking at the second level is tied into that slide. And then, that then is tied into the receivers and who they're hot off of. So it's a little bit more complicated, I think, than people might realize. So good discussion there. Really good discussion all the way around. Who's a guy, Fran, that's underrated by the media?
I'm going to pick one guy here, and I'm going to go with Daniel Wise from Kansas. A guy, to me, on film, one of my favorite players to study, really active, really athletic. I thought that his combine workout was solid, not great, but solid. He had a really good week of practice down at the East-West Shrine game. I was surprised that he was not at the Senior Bowl. I thought from talent alone, he probably could have been. His production was outstanding over the course of his career as a starter. He's got an outstanding motor. He comes from a football family. His dad played in the NFL. His older brother plays in the NFL now. I think when you look at Daniel Wise, you feel really good about his ability to project. I think he'll be a starting one technique or even a starting three technique in the NFL. Not a Pro Bowl, perennial Pro Bowl talent. But to me, a guy that most years, I think we're talking about a day two selection with the depth in this class. I think he could fall to day three, but whoever gets him is going to get a good football player.
Who is the guy that you like, but there's something about him that scares you?
Yeah, I would say if we're going to pick one, look, there's a lot to like with Josh Allen, right? I mean, obviously a freak athlete, former high school receiver, has a lot of the movement skills you're looking for, can turn the corner, can win off the ball with a quick first step, looks great coming out of a three-point stance. People don't realize all the things that he was asked to do in that Kentucky defense. I mean, even going back to his junior season when he was getting a lot of love as well, he'll play in a two-point, he'll play in a three-point, he'll set an edge, he'll drop back and play in coverage as well as rush the passer. Had 7.5 sacks his junior year, came back and more than doubled that this year, had 17 sacks, a bunch of them in crunch time, when it mattered, when his team needed it most. And that stuff does matter to NFL teams, right? I mean, the fact that, he'll come out and have a sack late the game in fourth quarter and get a sack fumble and Kentucky wins. I mean, that's a huge, huge thing. So I think when you look at Josh Allen, there is a lot to like there. The thing that concerns me, I want to see him continue. He put on a lot of weight coming into this year. I want to see him continue to develop that weight and get stronger, right? Because there are times where he was still blocked one-on-one by tight ends last year. I can think of that Georgia game that really kind of sticks in my mind as an area where I'd like to see him win more often one-on-one as a consistent player. That can't happen when you're that guy for an NFL team, when you're that primary pass rusher. You can't be blocked one-on-one by a tight end or even by a tackle. I mean, you've got to be able to win those one-on-one matchups. So that's the one thing you don't like about Josh Allen, but overall, there's a lot to like there. Like I said, the athletic profile, the production, the character, a kid that really kind of worked his way. He's from New Jersey, went down to Kentucky, and just got better each and every season. He's a really, really exciting player, but you just want to see him continue to work on getting stronger at the point of attack and winning more of those one-on-ones.
How about a guy, Fran, that you feel like is a pretty safe guy in this year's draft? Might not, you know, be a guy that ends up being all pro every year, but you just feel pretty good about he's going to at least be solid.
Yeah, let's talk about a couple Clemson kids here. For the edge group, we'll talk about Cleveland Farrell, who, to me, outside of Bosa, and I would say probably Brian Burns too, is, you know, from Florida State, I would throw Cleveland Farrell in there as just being one of the more polished pass rushers, right? I mean, he's so well-developed with his hands, has been a three-year starter for them, started his redshirt freshman year earlier than I think they would have liked because, you know, early in his career, he was still very raw. And I think now when you look at Cleveland Farrell, a much more polished player, a much more confident player with what he's doing at the point of attack, he can, again, like we talked about with Allen, will drop in coverage a little bit, will set the edge, and is a really good run defender. He uses his length well. He's a high motor kid and, again, knows how to get after the quarterback. The question you have with Cleveland Farrell, you know, what is his athletic upside? You know, is he a super explosive guy? Is he super fluid and twitchy? No, he's probably none of those things. But I think when you look at him overall, a really, really good football player. And so I think when you look at Cleveland Farrell, I feel really good about his transition. You know, and then on the other side, when you talk about a defensive tackle, I kind of feel similarly about Christian Wilkins, you know, who's been, again, another guy who started 3 years for Clemson, really well-rounded player, and has played two different positions because, you know, due to injuries, like I said earlier with Farrell, he played earlier than they would have liked. Same reason with Wilkins. He played defensive end early in his career, not because they really wanted him there, because he was always in that, you know, 285, 290 range, but because he was athletic and versatile enough and a good enough kid, he was like, you know what, this probably isn't my best position, but this is where they need me at right now. I'm going to play defensive end because of the injuries along this defensive line. So I think when you look at Christian Wilkins, a versatile guy, an athletic guy, very disruptive, high motor, great kid off the field, team captain, you know, one of the best personalities in college football, one of the best personalities in this draft, feel really, really good about Christian Wilkins and his transition here to the NFL.
Let's get to a guy that you feel like is scheme specific.
Yeah, well, and let's stay with Clemson. We'll talk about Dexter Lawrence, you know, from Clemson. And I think, you know, you look at him, certainly a bigger defensive tackle, right? And I think really what you look at with Dexter Lawrence is, you know, he's at his best when he's controlling a block. You know, he's got that explosiveness to get upfield, especially for a guy who's, you know, up north of 330 pounds. Then that really stands out to you as his ability to move. But I like him best where he's playing through contact. And to me, you know, that's when you're looking at him and the way that he's going to transition, I don't want to say that he can't play in a true one-gap scheme. Of course he can. He was asked to do it plenty at Clemson. But I do like his ability to play through contact a little bit more. And so, you know, those teams that will kind of utilize more of a hybrid one-gap, two-gap scheme, ask their guys to do a couple different things, I like his ability to play in that kind of a scheme more. I like him more playing through contact, playing through blocks.
Yeah, he's a big boy, man.
He's so powerful.
All right, so a day three gem that you want to chime in on.
And I think that I wouldn't have even need to put his name down in the rundown. You probably would have guessed who I would have said. And it's going to be Oregon pass rusher Jalen Jelks. A guy that I was very high on coming into the season. Didn't have the kind of production I hoped for and had a bad combine workout. So that has not helped his cause. I still like them, though. I still like this kid. I think when you look at him, his skill set translates well to the NFL. I like his ability to get after the quarterback with length, with athleticism. athleticism. I like his motor a lot. Again, another guy who can defend the run. So I think when you look at Jalen Jelks, this is a player that, you know, it seems like he could slide to day three, and I think someone's going to get a really good player at the end of the day, because I really, really like his skill set. I've said in the past that he kind of reminds me of Danielle Hunter when he was coming out of LSU, now with the Minnesota Vikings, and one of the best pass rushers in football. I really, really like Jalen Jelks and his skill set.
So why is he a day three guy? I mean, you've been talking about him for months.
Yeah, I think ultimately when you look, number one, at what he did at the combine, it was a very poor workout athletically at the combine. You know, the number of sacks, he only finished his career. I mean, I just mentioned what you did with Josh Allen. Josh Allen had 17 sacks last year. Jalen Jelks had 15 and a half in his entire career, you know, and he started what? He started two seasons for the Ducks and played a couple of years before that as a backup and was a key part of the rotation. So I think when you look at Jalen Jelks, look, would not surprise me at all if he went day two. I think that his talent is worthy of that. But I think that you could, you know, when you start talking about, okay, we know all the big names, right? Nick Bosa, Brian Burns, Cleveland Farrell, Montez Sweat, Josh Allen, you know, go down the list. Now it's, you know, Rashawn Gary, obviously. Then you get down to those day two names. I mean, Jalen Ferguson and, you know, Chase Winovich and O'Shane Zimenez. And, you know, you get down to the further down the list and it's like, all right, well, are all of these guys going to go in the first three rounds? You know, and then you throw in wild cards like Christian Miller that people are high on, Jonathan Ledbetter, Sharif Miller, Max Crosby from Eastern Michigan. I mean, there's a lot of names. So not all of them are going to go in the first couple of days, and that's just kind of the numbers game. So now it comes down to Jalen Jelks. Like, all right, well, is he going to be a fourth-round guy? He could be a fourth-round pick when it's all said and done. So to me, like I said, to me, he's not, but that's why he's a guy that I would say would be a day three gem, is a guy that I think his talent is worthy of going earlier, but due to circumstances, he could fall a little bit.
Wow. Man, just when you – even when you name, like, the day two guys, they're good. Like, Winovich is good. I mean, there is
Winovich is a good player.
Yeah, I mean, there is some real, real depth to your point. Speaking of depth, it's been pretty good depth in the NCAA tournament so far with some of these SEC schools, Tennessee, Auburn, LSU. We're used to the SEC schools dominating in football, but they've been really good in basketball as well. You can decide whether or not you think they're going to continue to have success. Some of these awesome Sweet 16 matchups, I'm already fired up. Even Virginia Tech Duke should be good. Go to betonline.ag. That Duke game was unbelievable yesterday. Use the promo code podcast1. You get a 50% welcome bonus when you do that. So we got the Sportsnet Bracket Challenge going. I don't know as of yet whether or not my bracket won any money for the first week. If it did, though, I'm able to put some money into your account. I can deposit each week and put money into your betonline.ag account, but you have to have a betonline.ag account. It's a Sportsnet Bracket Challenge presented by betonline.ag. March Madness now down to Sweet 16. We are heating up. Don't forget to use that promo code podcast1 at betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. All right, Fran, let's get to it. Finally, we've got three for one. Three more guys that you want to talk about or mention for whatever reason.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple big names we haven't talked about, right? And we'll talk with – and all three of these guys are being talked about in the top 15. So we'll start with Ed Oliver, the defensive tackle from Houston. Was considered by most to be a top three, top five prospect entering the season. Now seen as more – I got to think that his floor, absolute floor, is 14 with Atlanta. I can't imagine that he falls below them, but – I guess we'll find out. I think when you look at Ed Oliver, certainly size is a concern, but outstanding athlete, quick first step, high motor, knows how to defend the run. People kind of say, oh, he's undersized, he can't defend the run. Like, no, he can defend the run. He knows how to use his hands. I mean, a lot of reps inside as a nose tackle will help you there. I mean, he's used to dealing with extra attention on the inside. A lot of times you'll see not two guys, but even three guys trying to block Ed Oliver up front. So I think when you look at what he's able to do playing through contact as well as getting on the other side, I mean, the lack of production as a pass rusher, a little bit concerning. I mean, 13 and a half sacks in 33 starts is not nothing to stick your nose up to, but not to the level of some of these other guys we've talked about. That being said, his tackle production is ridiculous. I mean, 192 tackles in 33 starts, 53 tackles for loss in 33 starts. I mean, those are ridiculous numbers. And I think when you look at Ed Oliver, that carries out into the film. He's a really, really impressive player, a guy that I think a team will be lucky to have. We'll go to the next one is Brian Burns. And I mentioned him a little bit a few minutes ago. When you look at Brian Burns, again, a little bit on the undersized portion. I think people were worried, okay, well, how big is he going to be at the combine? You know, is he in the 220s? Did he get up into the 230s? He came in at 249, and a lot of the times when you see a guy come in and a lot heavier than people think, usually they don't test. Well, he tested, and he tested through the roof. He was outstanding. He ran 4.56. His jumps were good. His agility was good. I think when you're looking at Brian Burns, this is a guy that is a plus athlete, really explosive short area burst, but more importantly, he's really good with his hands, and he understands how to attack offensive linemen. You told me in the past you compared him to a guy that you played with, an Andre Carter, just in the way that he's built. I think when you look at Brian Burns, he's got the ability to have that kind of career as a plus pass rusher, a guy that can get after the quarterback. He was a leader of that team this year, Florida State team that's obviously gone through a lot over the last couple of years with the coaching change and, you know, so much turmoil on both sides of the football. Brian Burns has been one of the leaders down there. So to me, he's an outstanding player and one of the best pass rushers in this draft. And then lastly, we'll get to Rashawn Gary, who's a guy that obviously another guy who's very highly built, considered by some to be a top five, top 10 pick entering this season. I think when you look at him, he's got all the physical tools you're looking for, right? I mean, his size, his explosiveness, just a rare combination of size and movement. He's strong at the point of attack, has the ability to hold up in the run game, can do a lot of different things for you. But what I really like about him is what his position versatility can be. I mean, you can line him up inside, you can line him up outside, and he can show the ability to win in both spots. Kind of similar, you know, to me. You know, you look at what Jadeveon Clowney has become with the Houston Texans. I'm not talking about Clowney, the number one pick. I'm talking about Clowney, you know, the pass rusher with Houston. And what they've done with him is they've figured out ways to kind of move him around, get him matched up with guards, allow him to win against interior offensive linemen. They've gotten creative with him with all their different blitz packages. I think Rashawn Gary can be that kind of a player in the NFL. And, you know, again, line him up inside, find ways to let him win his one-on-one. You know, his skill set is really, really impressive. You do worry a little bit about the flexibility, his ability to turn the corner, but this kid is really, really impressive from a linear athlete standpoint. Really, really impressive. I'm excited to watch this kid play and just see where he ends up, you know, what his scheme fit will be at the next level. But Rashawn Gary is certainly a guy that we've got to talk about before this show's over.
So, friend, why has Ed Oliver, you know, it seemed like everything was top five pick, top three pick, maybe number one pick overall, all last offseason, all during the season. What sort of happened where he, you know, has dropped off a little bit?
Well, part of it is that the fact that he got off to a really slow start, right? So we came in talking a lot about Ed Oliver, right? And then he didn't get a sack until mid-October. He had two sacks against East Carolina, and that was the first sack of his season. Meanwhile, Quinnen Williams is jumping all, and that's really when he jumped onto the radar, and he was so productive early in the season, and that carried through the college football playoff. It didn't help then also that he got hurt. He had that knee injury that he was dealing with, and then he had the incident with his coach on the sideline that made national news. So I think when you look at Ed Oliver, there wasn't a lot of really things, you know, positive buzz. There wasn't a ton of positive buzz with Ed Oliver throughout the course of his final season there. He had already declared for the draft. That was already a foregone conclusion. It was already all right. He's going to be in this draft class. So it wasn't like there was this positive bump in December, like, oh yeah, all right, Ed Oliver's in the class. Now let's talk about him again. No, like, everyone had already been talking about Ed Oliver, but all these other names were coming into the limelight. Quinnen Williams, Christian Wilkins continue to get a lot of positive buzz. Obviously, that entire Clemson defensive line. So people weren't really talking about him, and I think that, look, we don't know how this is going to play out, right? I mean, Ed Oliver could be the seventh overall pick, and then all this is for nothing. But I think that's why you're not hearing him being talked about as much right now, you know, in mock drafts, is that, you know, the arrow was not pointing up with him entering the offseason. It really was all right, well, what are we talking about with that Oliver now? The sack production wasn't great this past season. You know, he had the injury. There was the that incident I mentioned. So, you know, all these different things, I think, have just led to some negative buzz with him. He didn't work out at the combine, really. He did his jumps, but didn't do anything after that. So it's not like now we can say, oh, man, he had an outstanding workout. Let's talk about Ed Oliver now as a top 10 pick. No, we haven't had that discussion yet. So I think really what you're talking about is he hasn't had that buzz. And that's really what helps. At the end of the day, mock drafts are done by who? They're done by the media. And the media is going to talk about the guys that are in the headlines. And for all the different reasons, Ed Oliver just hasn't been in the headlines. He was in the headlines over the summer, but that hasn't been the case. And so I think that's one of the big reasons why, you know, we've kind of seen this drop a little bit in his buzz. But at the end of the day, it really what matters is what happens draft weekend. And he very well, his talent says he could go into, you know, the 7th overall pick, the 8th overall pick, the 11th overall pick. And then after, at the end of the day, that's all that really matters. But I think that's why we haven't really been seeing him go that high in most mock drafts.
You can always catch him on Twitter at FDuffy3. He's terrific. All the stuff he does for the Eagles with the Journey to the Draft podcast, the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. And of course, he posts all that stuff on social media, which is great. I'm at Ross Tucker NFL, Twitter and Instagram. Facebook is facebook.com/RossTuckerNFL. Love how many of you are evidently spreading the word about this podcast as the numbers keep going up each and every week as we get closer and closer to the 2019 NFL draft. Remember, you can always go back if you missed any of them and listen to our position-by-position breakdown, just like what Fran did today for the edge guys and the defensive tackles. That's available every week. That's the beauty of these episodes. You can go back and listen to them multiple times if you'd like. We'll keep it rolling next week with yet another position group, still several more that we have to get to. And it's a busy week for all of the RT Media podcasts. Already posted the Ross Tucker Football Podcast talking about the retirement of Rob Gronkowski, as well as the owners' meetings and the Kaepernick settlement, as well as the Robert Kraft statement and potential rules changes. We'll have the Even Money Podcast today talking about the Browns as the 5th biggest favorites to win the Super Bowl, along with some of the March Madness stuff. We'll have the Fantasy Feast tomorrow with Evan Silva. I encourage you to listen to that one. We're going to have the best mock draft guy over the last 10 years when it comes to mocking the draft. He'll be on tomorrow's Fantasy Feast podcast as well. So if you're really into the draft and if you're listening to this, you are, make sure you are listening to the Fantasy Feast podcast this week. Other than that, the keg is kicked and we are all tapped out.
Thanks for enjoying your Frosty One while listening to the College Draft. Chugga, 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 chugga. Make sure you're also subscribing to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Fantasy Feast, and Even Money Podcasts, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.